Hey, this is Rob Liefeld, and you're listening to Matt, Ian, and Paul on the McSauce Podcast.
Welcome to episode 327 of the McSauce Podcast. My name is Paul McGinty. With me, as always, is Ian Sharpley.
Hello!
And Matt Cassell.
Hi.
It is Monday night, June 15th. Holy shit, folks. The middle of the year, 2020. It's felt like 10 years wrapped into half a year. But we're not here to lament on the state of the world. We're here to talk fun things like the passing of Denny O'Neill.
So fun.
We're going to talk a little. Paul watches the Tarantino movies, a little Tarantino update at the top of the show. We're going to get into the sad passing of Denny O'Neill, who left an enormous mark on the comic book industry. And then we're going to get into a little bit of that old PS5 release news from last week. But before we do any of that, Matt, what do?
We do housekeeping with Ian Sharpley.
Hey! Come on down to McSauce.com. That's where our webcomic is. Come on down and check it out. We got strips. We got comics. You can also check us out on the old social medias.
I wasn't sure if he was going to do all of housekeeping like that.
No, I will not do housekeeping in my native Pittsburgh tongue. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, all the normal places that you always check us out. You can also find the new Patreon on patreon.com.
Oh, it's hot. It is so hot.
We have a lot of different episodes available. We do some different things there. We have great subscribers that have been pitching in $5 a month, and we've been trying to give you guys great shows. We promised at the beginning to give you at least 2 episodes a month, but we've been going above and beyond. Let me pat ourselves on our back. We've been putting out about 4 episodes a month, so you have been getting a double dip of McSauce. You get the regular main feed for free, and if you pitch in $5 and help us out with some of our hosting fees, you get some special episodes. And if you're a new Patreon subscriber, you will automatically get sent a survey. There you can request a personalized episode. You can ask us to do anything that you want for any length of time that you want, or, you know, up to an hour.
I wasn't sure how this was going to go with, giving the patrons carte blanche to create their own episode.
You don't trust our fans, dude?
No, because I believe they will spite us purposefully. But it has been really cool. It's been a lot of fun, taking these ideas from the fans and making them into real episodes. I think they've been some of our best episodes, period, not just on the Patreon, but through the regular Prime feed. Like, I think we've done some really good stuff for this Patreon. So thanks to everyone who is a Patreon subscriber. It means a lot to us. It's not just beer money. It is hosting fees. It is helping us keep the lights on, as they say in the biz. So thank you very much. And if you haven't subscribed yet, this is a great time to subscribe and check it out. There's some really cool episodes in there. You don't just get like the last 5 episodes. You get all of the Patreon content, and there's a lot of different content in there. A lot of really unique, really different stuff. So if you haven't signed up, please do. We will really appreciate it.
That's all I got. Do you want to jump into the episode now, buddy?
Yeah, let's jump on in. So a few weeks ago, Matt was talking about the Tarantino movies, and I was like, oh, I've only seen 2 of them. Well, since I've seen, 7 or 8, maybe.
This is a section we like to call 6? Pulp Fiction.
That's really good. Oh, man, that's good stuff. Yeah, the old Pulp Fiction segment. So, since we last met, I watched Planet Terror, which is a Robert Rodriguez movie, but it's butted up with Death Proof. So, I watched Planet Terror, Death Proof, and Inglourious Basterds. And Planet Terror is awful. Like, I think that's a, it's a, it's, I don't think it's a good movie. But that's not technically part of Pulp Fiction.
I don't think it was meant to be an Oscar movie, though. It was meant to be totally
grindhouse trash.
Yeah, and like, and I understand like the 70s aesthetic and, you know, what they were doing with those two movies. And I think Death Proof, I think half of Death Proof worked very well. Half of it wasn't so great, but Planet Terror just stunk. And maybe that's, maybe it was so, it did so well, it being a weird 70s movie that I just thought it was stupid. Like, I kept waiting. Like, I like all the bombast of it and how crazy it is, but I just, I was just bored, like, the whole time. But Death Proof, the second half of Death Proof is so fucking cool. I love Kurt Russell. I love the fucking Death Proof car.
I have a Kurt Russell bobblehead from Death Proof.
It's Stuntman really? Mike.
Where did you get Stuntman that? Stuntman Mike. I got it for Christmas years ago.
Yeah.
I think it was, or maybe it was... Oh, sorry about that. Don't know why that started playing.
Wow.
Very strange.
Wow. I don't know why the salary cap collapse is going forward either, Matt. But I think you could have gotten to the Rosario Dawson half of Death Proof a lot quicker. I think we spend way too much time with Jungle Julie and Vanessa Ferlito.
I think that was kind of the point, though, was to kind of make you think you are introduced to the main girl of the movie and then for her to be killed off kind of sort of unexpectedly there.
Yeah. I get it. I totally understand that's what they were doing, but they did the same thing in Scream in a quarter of the time. Like, they kill off Drew Barrymore, like, boom. You get it, you understand who that character is, you're invested because this is your lead, and then done. Like, we spend way too much time with that first set of girls. Like, who fucking gives a shit?
It was like an extended version of the beginning of Reservoir Dogs. Where they're all sitting around in that bar.
Well, like, but yeah, but there's other stuff happening that is interesting, but it's all boring. There's just, it's too
much. It's interesting, but boring.
It's too much. Well, there's bits and pieces that are interesting, but overall, it's boring. Like, you get who Stuntman Mike is. There's the mystery of who Stuntman Mike is and his dealings with Rose McGowan's character. And then, like, she's asking Quentin Tarantino, the bar guy. He's like, I don't know. He's in some stuff. So you understand the mystery surrounding him. There's some of the threat posed of why Vanessa Ferlito saw him earlier, but all of that shit could have really been cut down. But by the time you get to the Rosario Dawson and Mary Elizabeth Winstead part, oh my God, that movie fucking sings. And it reminded me of the pod race in Phantom Menace. One of my favorite things about Phantom Menace is the sound of the pods, especially the sound of Sebulba's pod. And watching that fucking car chase where Stunt Chickie's belted herself to the hood and then they turn it around and then they're chasing Kurt Russell, the car sounded so good. And, like, the second half of that movie was outstanding. I also watched Inglourious Basterds, which was cool, but I don't know. I feel like there were times I was kind of, like, fading out. It didn't really hold my interest like some other things did.
Too much history.
It wasn't the history of it. It was just I could have watched Christoph Waltz the whole time. Like, I thought he was riveting when he was on the screen, but, like, I didn't really give a shit about the bastards themselves. Like, I don't know. There are just times in that movie where I'm just kind of, like, in and out. Like, it felt very, it held my interest very unevenly.
Well, it's been a long time since I saw that movie, but that was kind of my feeling on it, too. I thought it was a little boring. With that said, I want to go back and revisit it and see if I get into it. But I thought that it was so underwhelming that it killed my Tarantino buzz. Because up until that point, I was completely on board with everything that he did, because I think he did Inglourious Basterds after the Kill Bill movies. Mm-hmm. And then he started to get into the history stuff.
Yeah.
Which, I like history. I follow history. I read about it. And it just didn't interest me. I don't know if it was that alternate universe take on it or something that wasn't my thing. But I think I just prefer his crimey, pulpy, kind of more street level stuff, as opposed to kind of going into a bigger, more grandiose form of storytelling.
Yeah, and like I liked Inglourious Basterds. Like, I thought it was cool, but when you're comparing it with the stuff that I love, like Kill Bill 1, Pulp Fiction, second half of Death Proof, like, it just doesn't really measure up. It's more like, it's kind of like a little bit better than Jackie Brown.
Oof. Hey, I just rewatched Jackie Brown.
I hate that movie.
Jackie Brown?
Yeah.
I just rewatched it.
So boring.
And I loved it.
Ugh. I kind of dug Jackie Brown.
Yeah.
I thought it was great.
No. I may want to watch Jackie Brown again over Reservoir Dogs. I feel like I got everything I needed to get from Reservoir Dogs in one viewing, but I feel like there's more nuance in Jackie Brown that would bear more fruit in repeated viewings.
It never felt like, and I don't think will ever feel like, a Tarantino movie to me. Much like, I guess, the way that you're kind of feeling about Inglourious Basterds, Matt. Jackie Brown just never, it didn't do the things that I come to a Tarantino movie to really get into and watch.
Not a lot of gruesome killing in Jackie Brown.
Yeah, I mean, like,
in Jackie Brown.
No, don't do it. Don't do it. And what's funny is later on in your Pulp Fiction viewing, you're going to run into Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And it's one of the, honestly, as big of a Tarantino fan as I am, it's one of the only ones that I went to the theater to actually go see.
Yeah.
I didn't see either of the Kill Bills. I did see Death Proof in the theaters. I didn't see Inglourious Basterds or Django.
You did see Death Proof?
I did see Death Proof.
So you went to Grindhouse in the theater?
I did, yeah, the double feature. Yeah.
That was like...
That was a lot of fun.
It was one of the best times I ever had in a movie.
Was that Thanksgiving trailer part of...
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Best part of the whole thing.
I was kind of bummed that it wasn't attached to the DVDs. They run...
They weren't on the special features?
It was probably on the special features, but on the DVD, You Let Me In, before Planet Terror starts, they run two of the trailers, or maybe they just run Machete, but there was part of the viewing experience when you're watching it. And I thought, oh, this is probably going to be before Death Proof.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't. I guess they just relegated it to the special features.
Yeah, I could have swore it was on there. But
yeah, that's a bummer. Well, here's the real bummer of that release. They never released it as one package. They always separated them. And I hate that, because I want to just put it on and watch it like it's one long movie.
Yeah.
Because that was the way it was intended to be experienced when they came out. You know, they went and they made real movies of Machete. And didn't Rob Zombie do kind of a cartoon version of like the Nazi women, werewolf women of the SS or something like that?
I don't remember that. That sounds totally up your alley, something that you would really like. But no.
Yeah, that sounds something that I'm interested in too. Like, I know that title, but I've never seen it.
I thought that he did. So anyway,
you might be right. I'm unaware of it.
My point is, I think obviously they made some of those trailers into real movies, but for me, the truly missed opportunity was Eli Roth's Thanksgiving. I think there are Eli Roth fans to this day that are like, dude, why do you not make that movie? It would be so good.
Machete had two movies.
Yeah.
Two movies. Machete.
Machete and cuts maybe, again.
Maybe because it had the charisma of Danny Trejo, whereas Thanksgiving has Michael Biehn as like its... You know, it's leading man. Although I love that part when the guy puts his finger in the pool of blood and he tastes it, licks it, and he goes, "It's blood." And then Michael Biehn goes, son of a bitch. Like, they couldn't tell it was blood to begin with.
Well,
like,
could have been
cops
gravy.
Investigating. That's true. Could have been cranberry sauce.
Yeah. But the brutal violence, you really get a lot of it later on in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And as I was saying, I went to the theaters to see it, and it was funny. It was on a, I want to say it was on a holiday weekend or some kind of weekend where there were a lot of older audience members that I feel like they went to go see a real nice Brad Pitt, Leonardo DiCaprio film.
They never heard of Quentin Tarantino?
It doesn't seem like they did. And holy shit, were they in for a surprise, because Paul, not to spoil anything, but Once Upon a Time in Hollywood gets really fucking violent. So a lot of the audience members were horrified.
Unless I'm remembering something wrong, Ian. Close your ears for a second, Paul.
I'm pretty sure you can spoil whatever. Like, I know the story, and like,
it wasn't violent until the very end.
Yeah, the very end, but the very end's like pretty violent.
I feel like, again, from what I remember, Inglourious Basterds was a more violent movie than Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Maybe there's more killing, but that last.
I think there's more killing, but there's not gratuitous violence in Inglourious Basterds. Yeah. Like, even like. So I started watching Django Unchained today, maybe like 12 minutes into it. And they just released, Christoph Waltz just releases the slaves, and they shoot the guy trapped under the horse. And like they shoot him with a shotgun, but like his head blows up like a barge of fireworks. It's like there's not a person's head doesn't carry.
Why does it have to be floating down the Mississippi? I don't understand this.
There, like, a person's head doesn't carry that much stuff.
Right, but that's like the point.
Exactly. And I don't think there was any of that in Inglourious Bastards. I think Inglourious Bastards was a lot more realistic about, you know, like the killing and the blood and all that stuff.
But Kill Bill is not.
Oh,
Kill Bill is over the top.
Kill Bill is like that.
Buckets and gallons of blood. Barges of blood.
Fireworks head.
Did you guys see Ozark on, I think it's on Netflix?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That shotgun blast of the one cartel leader at the end of the first season is maybe my favorite, like, head getting blown off. Out of like all the cinematic head getting blown off that I can think of, there was one, coincidentally, another Netflix show at the beginning of the Mindhunter series. A guy shot his head off with a shotgun.
Yeah,
but
right.
That was very CGI heavy, if I remember correctly. But the one in
Ozark, they really killed that guy.
Yeah.
Nothing. No CGI.
Nothing I hate more than an actor that won't die for his craft.
So
speaking of dying,
wow,
segue.
I mean,
a strong segue.
I still have Django. Django. I want to see Hateful Eight again, and
Once Upon a Time.
Those are the last three. I'll definitely get through Django before next week. But we lost a comic book legend a couple days ago, and Denny O'Neil, a longtime DC Comics writer who is responsible for a big swath of some of DC's largest enduring characters, like Jon Stewart and Ra's al Ghul.
The way you said that was just kind of weird.
Ra's al Ghul?
It wasn't the way you said it. The listeners aren't going to be able to pick up on it. It was the face you made when you did it.
Yeah, this is not a visual medium. I don't even know what my face looked like.
I thought that the thing that threw me off was I thought you were going to say Green Lantern and Batman, but you decided to go
with... Well, these are characters he created, correct?
Yeah, he didn't create Green Lantern or Batman.
I understand that, but he's most famous...
Green Lantern.
He's most famous for writing Green Lantern books, Batman books.
Oh, yeah. His big staples are the, you know, Green Arrow, Green Lantern run.
I thought it was Batman. I thought that was what he was most known for. Wasn't he
That was going to be my next thing. Like, the things he is most known for are... the Green Lantern, Green Arrow run and his Batman run with Neil Adams.
Yeah.
Like, those are, like, those are big fucking deals. Like, those are books that when you're recommending something for comic book readers to read, that's what you recommend.
So, for me, I've never read a Denny O'Neil book, I don't think. I don't think I've ever read a single comic book that he wrote, which is kind of hard to believe, being a comic book fan for a few years. And then I was like, well, who did he create? Like, what is he known for creating? Ra's al Ghul and Jon Stewart.
Also Bronze Tiger.
And Bronze Tiger.
I'm a big Bronze Tiger guy.
I feel like...
Do you care that much about what he created, though? Like, specifically the characters that he created and not just the stories that he wrote? I don't ever look at a writer and be like, well, what exactly did he create? I look at the stories that he was involved in.
Well, I think in specifically Jon Stewart and Ra's al Ghul are part and parcel with these stories he's written. Because one of the most famous comic book stories he wrote was the racism issue of Green Lantern, Green Arrow, where, you know, Hal's, you know, space cop, he does all the shit and he's met with, but what are you going to do about racism in America? And it's a very, like, special episode, like, Different Strokes type episode of that comic book. And also, like, the Demon's Head story where he introduces Ra's al Ghul, and Ra's al Ghul is, like, he's the villain Chris Nolan used first out of the gate for Batman Begins. Like, so I think those two characters in particular are part and parcel with talking about the stories that he created, because you don't have that Green Lantern, Green Arrow run without Black Jon Stewart, and you don't have that Demon's Head stuff without Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm just saying, Matt, you were saying that you kind of went to who did he create. I never look at that whenever I'm looking at a writer as a totality of their
agree with that typically. However, when we're talking like legend status, like like this guy, and then I start thinking about who his peers and contemporaries would have been, Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, guys of that ilk, then Denny O'Neil, it's like the characters that he created, it pales in comparison to those other legends. And that's like why I was making the comparison. Rob Liefeld has created more enduring characters than Denny O'Neil, but I don't think that the comics community at large, maybe I'm wrong, maybe this isn't a good comparison. I was going to say, when Rob Liefeld dies...
I was like, are you killing Rob Liefeld off right now on this podcast? How dare you? He did an opening intro
this is
for us.
In Elseworlds tale that I'm telling, this isn't reality. I'm just saying, like, would he receive the same legendary status, actually. That's a poor comparison on my part. But I am saying, like, I think the reason why Denny O'Neil was considered a legend obviously isn't because he's the guy that created Ra's al Ghul or Jon Stewart or wrote some Green Lantern comics. I think it's because of what he did on Batman, particularly by bringing him out of the camp of the 60s and turning him into a more serious character in the 70s, which obviously catapulted him toward ultimately being the Dark Knight that we all know today.
Yeah.
So I think he was very responsible for taking him in a completely different direction. And him probably more than Frank Miller is responsible for us recognizing Batman the way we do today.
I don't think that we get to Frank Miller without the 1970s contributions of Neil Adams,
right,
and Denny O'Neil, and those stories that were like, oh, he is a detective. There's a whole nother thing to him besides all the goofy stuff from the 1960s TV show. So right. it's a logical progression to The Dark Knight.
And I don't want to make it sound like I'm approaching this from a place of, well, what characters did you create? That's all that matters. But when you're responsible for someone like Ra's al Ghul and Jon Stewart and Azrael, like, those are big, like landmark characters. It's not, yeah, like he created, you know, like Ra's al Ghul and Leslie Tompkins and stuff, and you know, like D and E list Batman characters, but he's responsible for some big fucking characters. And like, I don't think that should go without note. And it's not me just saying, well, who did you create? That's what matters, because Rob Liefeld created a bunch of garbage that still gets talked about today. But these are really, really good fucking characters that Denny O'Neil made. And they're part and parcel with all of these big fucking stories. Like, we don't get the return to the detective without Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah, we don't get current Batman without those building blocks.
Like, you know, this is like tentpole era of like Batman stories. Like, you know, you start with, you know, Bob Kane and Bill Finger, and then you get to, you know, you go through the goofy 60s stuff, and then coming through late 70s and 80s, this is what like readjusted Batman and brought Batman back to.
I would love to read some of those 70s, and I don't even necessarily mean the Denny O'Neil era stuff. I know there was another writer that was working on it at the time that did more of like the classic villain stuff, like Penguin, Riddler, Joker. And I can't remember who that writer was, but that's kind of the stuff that I want to get my hands on and try it out. See if it's
a shame that DC Universe doesn't have a nice full backlog of issues that we can dive into and really learn.
It wouldn't
learn
be
the
an
history.
Episode of Mixsauce without you being critical of that service.
Yeah, there's a whole other litany of things that we all are critical of, but yeah, sure. No, I mean, seriously, it would be the perfect opportunity for you to be able to go and really look into all those
different
things.
You know what? Who knows? Maybe there is some shit on there.
We will never know, Matt. No one will ever know.
I guess that wasn't the best time to look.
I know with Marvel Comics, anytime that I want to dig in and really look at the history of this publisher, with a few exceptions, I can jump back and I can read all those comics. So there's no reason. AT&T has a lot of money. They can funnel it into a proper comics platform archive, if you will, to give us all of. And Matt, I only harp on it because I want it so bad, man. I want it because I grew up on Marvel Comics. So I kind of have I already have that base of history with knowing about even the old stuff that I don't have.
But yeah.
Maybe I came in contact with it, or I picked up reprints of Marvel Comics, those X-Men classics. So I read a bunch of those things. But with DC, I have all these blind spots, and I'm desperately looking for something to fill those blind spots. And I thought,
why don't
DC
you get
Universe
Comixology was. Unlimited?
I do have Comixology Unlimited.
And that
Unlimited.
Shit's not on there?
Not as much as I would hope for.
Okay. Well, you know, while there might not be classic 70s era Batman comics on DC Universe, you can get HBO Max, the digital comic.
What is this?
I don't know.
What is it?
It's a comic book called HBO Max.
Is it the adventures of three idiots watching Looney Tunes in a basement?
No, man. It's a fucking comic book about the HBO man or something.
This sounds right up your alley.
It reminds me of NFL Super Pro.
Well, no, I don't think
your favorite hero.
I don't think it's that, because I saw three different versions of three different characters of like from the Max line, like big bulky white guy, a black Miles Morales type guy, a girl with like tentacle arms. Like, there are different characters.
Yeah,
I think
that
these
sounds
are just,
like deviant art.
I think these are just mask. I think these are just Max mascots for their upcoming like DC digital platform.
Perhaps. It says here, to the Max, Hector. When a school teacher finds a mysterious device, it sends him flying into an incredible outer space rescue mission.
The mysterious device is Apple TV. See, that's what all these characters should be. They should all be different ways to stream HBO Max.
Oh my God. What the fuck is this?
Yeah, I don't know. That sounds
bad. It's a digital comic. It's a real thing. I don't think it's out yet, but.
But I think
Matt, is this going to push you
over
the edge?
Oh, I see it. I see it now. Yeah, the.
Are you going to subscribe now because of Hector the Max Man?
I just might.
You sucker.
No, this is on HBO or on DC Universe.
So they have that, but they don't have classic Denny O'Neil run on Batman.
How can you How can you promote the new fucking service if you're talking about Denny O'Neil comics from the 70s?
I'm sure there's a way. I'm sure there is marketing geniuses smarter than I that would be able to connect one for one those two different things. You keep those Batman movies on, and then you say, do you want to see where it all started? Here it is.
In the bottom corner of these comics, it says, it has the big HBO Max logo, and HBO Max, world premiere comic book event.
This sounds like wild garbage, Matt.
For...
This can't
we shouldn't even be talking about it.
I just can't even believe it's a thing. I can't believe it's a thing.
Dignity. And for real, I know you're going to subscribe because of this dumb shit.
It has to be a lead into, you know, like Ultimate DC or some shit. Like this can't just be like Stanley's Super Pro or like whenever
he
created all those fucking NHL.
He
mascot
fought
characters.
A character called Instant Replay.
Oh man, now, I hate that guy.
Now, first,
what a villain!
Now you
He's
see
too
him.
Long.
I think it was now you see him. Now you're dead or something like that. He fought against Ripsaw. He fought against
Ripsaw is a very 90s name.
Yeah, well, he had.
I'm pretty
sure
there
like,
was a Wildcats villain called Ripsaw.
He had circular saws like on his forearms, and if I'm not mistaken,
that doesn't make any sense,
he had
though.
Them on his hips, like kind of sideways.
He should have fought against like pass interference, and like he should have fought against too many men on the field.
No, he should have fought against unnecessary roughness.
That would have been the big boss,
right?
Yeah,
I think
personal foul.
Lawrence Taylor, I believe.
Personal foul.
In the first book.
Personal fouls like your Riddler type character. Like I think that's a too light and too common.
Yeah, unnecessary
you can beat
roughness
him up pretty quick.
Is the top. Yeah. Okay. All right.
I can lend you those issues if you'd like. Ian,
I can.
I don't think they're.
I can
Marvel
read them
Unlimited.
On. You know what, Matt? I'd love to. But I can read them on Marvel Unlimited.
Are they on there?
Absolutely. Yeah, I've looked them up.
Get the fuck out of here! Are they really?
It's a real service made for real comic book fans.
In this day and age of the cynical NFL player, I would love a gang facing off against Super Pro called the referees.
Oh, I would love them.
It's just a billion dudes in the referee stripes. Did we just make Super Pro better?
I'm waiting for the rebirth. Marvel Comics. I will
Super Pro rebirth.
You have your writer's room right here. Commission us to bring
his
Super Pro back.
His tech guy back at the base is the offensive coordinator.
I love it. I'm really interested in it. He has another sidekick concession stand guy comes out of the stands with first aid and drinks and beer here.
That's right. His Yoda, his Splinter. That's Coach.
Yeah, Coach.
Just Coach.
Oh my God, Coach. Yeah, Coach is
coach.
old grizzled dude. But
Coach may be a ghost.
Yeah.
The ghost of Coach, because Coach was murdered by
Coach Ghost.
The shit writes itself. I'm just saying, Marvel Comics, whoever's in charge of you right now, I don't know because I don't pay that much attention.
I'm trying to think of like a sidekick for Super Pro, though. Would it be like, the trainer would be more of like an Alfred role. Like, would the sidekick be, like...
The cheerleader?
You know, the kicker?
Not the kicker. I mean, it would have to be, I don't know, like the strength coach or something like that.
The cheerleader.
But, like, you know,
the cheerleader is
Batgirl. Yeah, but that's absolutely, that works. That's diverse. Let's do that. But like, who would the Robin be if you're like Super Pro? But what position is Super Pro? Is he just super everything?
Yeah, he's just
like, he doesn't need like a sidekick. But even like
the long snapper.
But oh, Matt, I really like that.
My sidekick holder,
Super
holder
Pro
boy,
Super Pro, and the long snapper.
Laces out, Super Pro.
This Denny O'Neill retrospective has taken a turn.
In the, you know what? In the tradition of rebirth, as Denny O'Neill brought Batman back from the depths and took him back into the shadows, we are bringing Super Pro back to his roots.
Would you change
the field? Would the you turf?
Would you change?
Well, what year did Super Pro premiere?
1990,
like 91.
So it was like the year of AstroTurf.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of AstroTurf.
A lot of twisted ankles.
Yeah. Oh, my God. AstroTurf is definitely a villain.
Oh, Super Pro, look out. You're ACL.
That's Holder. That's Holder Boy, everybody. All right. So, yeah. So
would
the
we
next
change,
project.
Would we change the look of Super Pro?
I think we have to update it, Matt, right? Don't we?
I guess.
I don't even know what Super Pro looks like. Is he white?
Like garbage. He looks like...
Did you say he's white garbage?
No, I said he
you
looks
said
like...
You said white and
I
he said garbage.
I don't know what he looks like.
I didn't know that...
Picture garbage wearing a football uniform.
Yeah, he
looks
like...
white.
Yeah, Super Pro's white. Do we have to make him black?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Super Pro's a black guy. Do we give him a position or...
I think the super part of Super Pro is that he can play every
any
position.
He can be your center, your quarterback, yeah. Running back.
Wait. Does he just play a lot of football, or does he fight crime? What's his deal?
What's the difference, Matt?
He went from sacking quarterbacks to tackling crime.
So he was a defensive Fifth player?
Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Deep cut.
I feel like he's got to be a defensive player because if... I feel like the offensive players are the villains.
In the Super Pro-verse?
In the NFL-verse.
Are they the villains?
I don't know. I'm just
They get
that.
All the rules bent in their favor, so you know what?
Who does
You're right.
the offense?
Mm-hmm. The world of Super Pro has been perverted by the Roger
usually,
Goodell, the real villain.
I think Matt, I was trying to stay close. We have me kind of standing up and readjusting myself issue that
behind the
Matt
scenes,
called
everybody.
Out before
behind
the
show.
I think Super Pro is all about the team. Offense, defense, whatever. Super Pro is about his team. I think the bad guys have to be a detriment to his team because Super Pro is nothing if not a team player.
But isn't he the team? Does he play all the positions at once?
He's no... You
That's what
he,
I get
he,
out of his power. He can play any position.
But,
but he
right,
still has
he
the rest
play,
of the team around
He can
him.
Play any position, but he can't do everything at once. There's, what, fucking 22
he's
guys
just
on
one
the
man.
Field? You can't do all of that at once.
He's no Superman.
So,
Superman couldn't even do all of it at once.
That's true. He can't hike the ball to himself.
Right. I think he could.
Hike the ball to himself?
But Super
yes.
Pro,
physically
but
impossible.
Super Pro doesn't
he's
have
fast enough.
Super speed. Super Pro is like Captain America. He's just
I don't
enhanced.
Think if I'm not again and if very I'm athletic. Mistaken, I feel like he had no superpowers. He was just like
a doofus.
A former football player that was in pretty good shape but wasn't in good enough shape to play football anymore due to injury.
Well, oh no, CTE.
That's like the dark side. That's the dark side of
is CTE. The big bad?
Yes.
Is that his kingpin?
CTE is kryptonite. It's an item that can cripple his mind
that, right,
and body.
It makes him want to kill himself.
Makes
I
him
like
not to forget to drive to his house.
I like that it's still like a gem. You know,
yeah,
it's a
rock CTE from the planet.
Like fucking... Unnecessary Roughness has a lockbox full of CTE.
Yeah, yes, he does. He does, and he pulls it out. And...
Yeah, like, well, since we're rebranding Super Pro, I think Super Pro is like Captain America. He's not indestructible like Superman. I think he takes his lumps, but like he just lasts way longer than a normal
What's Super Pro's origin? Did he get? He was developed in a lab. I'm sure.
We can do whatever we want. No, he gets some
at Balco Industries in San Francisco.
Super Pro. Here's the rewrite is. Super Pro's getting a little long in the tooth.
Oh no, son of Super Pro!
No, Super Pro has had a great career, but it's it's flagging a little bit. He's on the other side of 28.
Ah, Super Pro returns.
He makes the wrong choice. Of
he kills
pumping a
he
little.
He signed with the Browns.
Of pumping a little HGH, just give him a little boost, at the end. Give him one more season,
yeah,
but
one more season.
He gets some fucked up HGH. That there's a big mix up that we'll reveal later. That winds up being like a version of the Super Soldier Serum.
Oh no!
And all of a sudden, he's fucking Super Pro. And now he understands the gift he's been given. So not only does he help the fucking Browns to their first Super Bowl, but he also fights crime.
That story is way too fantastical and magical. The Browns are never winning anything.
That's right.
And, well, who does Super Pro play for?
And with great power.
America, you dickhead. This has been our greatest work.
Copyright McSauce, by the way. Don't anyone go fucking stealing.
Yeah, I mean,
this.
Yeah, fuck
don't
you, Marvel it. Comics. This is ours now.
No one go sending this to Marvel. So, thank you, Denny O'Neill, for your service in the comic book industry. But right now, we're going to talk about the PS5.
What's that stand for?
The PlayStation 5. There was a new video gaming system. And the successor to the PS4.
Well, let me guess. Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry, buddy. That was released, and you guys were gonna do a private reserve episode about it, but the date get pushed back? Or
we had some technical issues.
We had technical issues and scheduling issues, so we're here now physically.
So
to do
here
it.
We are, and you guys can tell me all about it because all I know is that PlayStation 5 was released. It looks like the Eye of Sauron, and there's a Miles Morales game.
I mean, that is basically it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what else I have to add.
So we'll see you next week. Paul, it was really interesting because they did this video event, just stream a video and show a whole bunch of games that are going to be on the PlayStation 5. And at the very end, they finally showed the console. But our very first glimpse of the console was in silhouette. And it truly, that was my immediate thought, was that it looked like the Tower of Sauron.
Yeah, with the eye between the
like, yeah, well, it was missing points. The eye.
Yeah.
But it totally, that's exactly what it looked like. And at first I was like, I thought I was looking at something Lord of the Rings. I'm not exaggerating when I say that that was really what popped into my brain for a split second until the lights came on and you can see it and you're like, oh, that's interesting.
It's a trapper keeper.
I think it looks kind of neat. I don't know if that's because it's hearkening back to my grade school trapper keeper carrying days, but like, I think it looks kind of cool.
I think it looks neat too. I enjoyed the after the announcement happened and Twitter just took a healthy shit all over it. I thought that was funny, but upon really taking a look at it, I think it's cool that there's a bold new look. Consoles haven't looked very different in a very long time, likely 20 years. Consoles have pretty much been black boxes. So this is kind of cool.
Is this a console that you can also put on its side? Because it doesn't look like you can. You can put, you know, Minas Morgul on its side.
Let's hope we can put it on its
PS Morgul.
I hope we can put it on its side. It's been, again, you know, 19, 20 years since I got freaky and stood my PlayStation up in that way. So hopefully we can lay it down.
Mine is upright right now.
Is it really? That's interesting.
It's funny because ever since the PlayStation 2, you've been able to set your PlayStation up vertically. Some felt like they were made to actually do that. The PS2 felt pretty good to do that.
Yeah.
The PS3, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
The PS4, not really so much either. But you can.
Yeah, PS2 and, really had that duality.
Yeah, and coincidentally, as one of the early adopters of the original PlayStation, which means I had a shitty version of it, you literally had to tilt it at a 45-degree angle up against something to get it to read the disc. Some people turned it upside down, but that didn't work for mine. I literally had to turn it at a 45-degree angle.
Really? That's intense, man.
I didn't have an original PS, I guess, just
PS1.
But I remember the goofiness of going over to a friend's house and having to tilt it up.
It was fucking bizarre, man. Like, I hated it because I wanted to enjoy my console. I know, yeah. You know, the hardware. I know it's stupid because it doesn't really do anything, but it just felt so ghetto to have it, like, propped up against the entertainment center, like, on the floor when you wanted to play it.
But even then, we were still kind of around that phase of blowing on our like,
dicks.
Blowing on our dicks. It wasn't that far after the cartridges from Nintendo. We were still doing weird stuff with your
Sega
Genesis. You had to like rock. For me, I had to like rock it a little bit to get it to go.
Oh, I never had an issue with the Genesis.
Yeah.
You know what? The only issue I think maybe with the Genesis was the controllers didn't like to stay in the ports very well, I want to say.
Well, they didn't like to stay, and nor did the buttons like to stay attached to the controller when I spiked it on the ground. Oh. I lost an NBA Live. So
wow. Yeah, the quality control on the Genesis.
I know, it was bullshit. Honestly, dude, I had a problem when I was in junior high, and I would spike the shit out of my controller so much that the buttons were kind of like sanded down in a way like where you could see how many times I threw it against like the couch or the ground or something
I never threw my controller.
I
just squeezed them to death. Like I would just squeeze them so hard. Like it would be like Lenny and the Rabbit from the old literary reference on the McSauce podcast. Yeah, I just squeezed the shit out of it and you know, I'd wear down
the fucking...
Is that
how Steinbeck wrote it? Lenny would squeeze the shit out of the rabbit.
Squeeze the shit out of it. I'd completely rub off the pattern on like the thumbsticks and like that'd be completely smooth and like buttons would just pop out. Yeah, I'm notoriously hard on shoes and video game controllers.
Good thing that you stopped using one.
Ian, they have a modern name for what you used to do. Rage quit. When kids play online these days, if they're losing, they just fucking quit playing the game.
I mean, it would always, like, I would still lose at the game. It would always be post-game freak out. So, yeah, rage quit, I guess, but, you know, I'd already lost at that point.
I'd get like, my arm fully cocked back to throw, and then my senses would get a hold of me, and I'd be like, do you know how much this costs?
Yeah, I was...
And then I'd slowly bring it back down, just be quietly mad.
Yeah, I was very impulsive as a youth, so a little bit now,
Ian,
as well.
Aside from the aesthetics of the console, by the way, it does work on its side. I've seen pictures of it on the side.
I haven't seen it any of the photos.
Weirdly,
the
disk drive appears to be on the bottom. That's the bottom part when you put it on its side.
Well, I thought, so tell me a story about this. I thought that this was an entirely digital console.
Well, there's two versions.
Okay, so one is and one isn't.
Yeah, you can see the one has like kind of a bulge, if you know what I mean.
I sure do.
Oh, I see it now, baby.
Yeah, and you can see the slot where the disk drive
That's
is.
That's where it just slips right in. Is
right,
there...
you just slip it right into that slot. And then you have the more symmetrical version of the console, the all-digital version. My guess is, I think they're both going to come out like at the same time. My guess is the digital version will probably be about $50 cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard a lot of people suggest it's going to be $100 cheaper.
Well, what's your feeling on that? Like, have you been purchasing physical games lately?
No, I think most people don't.
Did they not announce the sales price?
No, or a release date.
So what do we think? Like $500, right?
Isn't that the speculation? Or is it more?
If they want to sell them, they got to sell it at $500 or less.
What did 4 go for? If you got like 4 with all the bells and whistles. Was it?
Well, there was only one version when it came out, and it was $399.
Oh.
But they needed to do that because they had to undercut Microsoft with their new Xbox, because they were coming from a generation with the PS3 and the 360 where the Xbox it sold at least as many as the PS3, and at the beginning of that generation, the Xbox was kicking the shit out of PS3, and part of the reason was because PlayStation was too expensive, and I guess it was mostly because of the price. PS3 was too expensive.
I don't think
that
PS3 got off to a great start either. Weren't there some, I could be wrong, but weren't there some fits and starts with the games that were released, and it didn't have as much of a punch at launch as they would have expected?
Yeah,
it
was missing some, I think, some notable games. And the 360, the Xbox 360, had a lot of really cool exclusive stuff on its system, like Fight Night, the EA
Vampire
boxing
game. Yes.
Featuring Count Muhammad Ali.
And it had the Elder Scrolls Oblivion. Like, this shit wasn't on the PlayStation 3, and it clearly, like, set itself apart. I think consumers were smarter this time around, because the generation before that, PlayStation was like, man, we're going to have Toy Story-level graphics and blah, 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 and it never came even close to that. And I think people were like, this Xbox thing is, like, pretty fucking cool. It looks cool, it's got awesome stuff, and it's here now.
I may be mistaken, but I'm pretty sure the new Xbox has a release announcement in July.
And there's some preview stuff that's going around. We know about the new Halo game. We know what
is that an Xbox exclusive?
It is. And we know what the new Xbox looks like. It kind of, and yes.
Do we know what it looks like?
Yeah.
We do.
It
yeah.
Minas looks Tirith. Like no,
the White City.
No,
I mean, fucking wouldn't it?
It looks like a hobbit hole. No, I mean,
you put the disc in flat to the door.
you have to put like tea and crumpets in there as well to get it to go. Now, the new Xbox, to me, it looks like a sort of like a router that you would get from Xfinity or something like that. It just looks like a tall tower kind of.
It's
like
ironic that you say that, because the online criticism has been that the new PS5 looks like a router, mm-hmm. but in reality, the new Xbox looks much more like the router that I have in my house. It just, my router has a slanted top.
That's a fucking box. It's like a Borg ship, but long. That's it? Where do you put the disc in?
In the disc slot.
In the slot here, baby.
Like, I think it's kind of cool that it's just this, like, rectangle.
It actually has, you can't see it in that picture, but on the top, it's got this grated kind of top with vents.
I can
but
see it.
Does it curve in?
Yeah, it's a little bit convex,
right?
But
yeah.
It also has, like, a green LED in there, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. The PlayStation has the blue LED that kind of wraps around the whole thing.
Green versus blue. I don't know.
I'm
conflicted.
I think they're both kind of neat. In their hardware design.
Which one do you think, strictly aesthetically, which one would you prefer to have, like, on your shelf, Paul?
I would prefer to have PS5.
I like white appliances. My iPads are white.
Ironic.
I don't think this time around. My phone's back in the day. Used to have the white around it. So I'm a PS5 guy. Also, this is something else that I wanted to get into, Matt. Do you think that the console wars are sort of over because camps of people are more well-established? Like, I'm a PlayStation person. I don't even think about buying an Xbox. Like, it's not a thought that I have in my head.
Well, I don't know, because almost every generation you have a new market leader. And I'm talking about U.S. only, because I think Japan in particular is very anti-American. I think they're very, very loyal to Japanese products, so they're only going to support PlayStation. There was actually a really interesting rumor that turned out to be false, but there was this rumor going around a few weeks ago that for Microsoft to try to gain traction in Japan on the new Xbox, they were actually going to brand it as the Sega Xbox. Like, they were going to partner with Sega, and Sega was going to release it. Really cool.
I know
rumor.
That you love that.
I think
that would work. Would that fool
it
the Japanese
it
public?
It wouldn't fool them, but I feel like if they then support it like a Sega machine and come out with some of those weird, quirky Sega titles, yeah, it would work. Yeah. Absolutely. I don't think it would ever overtake PlayStation, I feel like, in Japan. But here, think about this. Starting with the first PlayStation, that one, its generation, its console war. The next generation, okay.
PlayStation 2.
PlayStation 2 won. Right. Trounced
like,
competition.
That's the biggest selling console of all time is PS2.
It is, yeah. Although the Wii was pretty close.
Which is insane, but...
And then the next generation, the 360, was the leader.
Mm-hmm.
And then the current generation that we're in, PlayStation, was the leader again. And it seems to me like the Xbox is coming very, very aggressively this time, which tends to happen when the company that gets their ass kicked in the previous generation needs to try to make up market share. They come back with much more consumer-friendly approaches, like lower price. Just like for example, right now Microsoft has this thing called smart delivery, where if, like, Ian, let's say you have an Xbox One, the current Xbox, and you buy the new Madden for it, then you buy an Xbox Series X in November, let's say. When the new Madden for that comes out, you're going to get that for free because you already bought regular Madden.
That's some really great customer service, right? Customer loyalty,
right?
Sort of.
The biggest game of the year this year is going to be Cyberpunk 2077. Have you heard of this one, Paul?
No.
It's the Keanu Reeves game.
Is it a brand new game? Is it a sequel to something?
Yeah, No, it's not a sequel to anything, but it's the follow-up game that CD Projekt Red is making. They're the people that made The Witcher game, which has become huge.
Toss a coin to your Witcher.
What?
Did you watch The Witcher?
No.
They sing that in The Witcher.
Oh, cool. So, it's their next game is a big deal. There are event games out there, I think. Anything that company makes and anything that Rockstar makes. Who's Rockstar, Paul?
Anything that Death Stranding guy makes? That
Not anymore. Like a pretty big deal. Not anymore. That was Hideo Kojima, and he made the Metal Gear games. And I think progressively, honestly, since the first one, Metal Gear Solid, on PlayStation, I guess technically that's not the first Metal Gear game, but it's the first one in like this sort of the way we see Metal Gear today. They've all been worse. Like, some might argue the third one was the best one, but...
I wouldn't know. I only played the NES first.
And his games got weirder and weirder, and I think less accessible. And I don't think that he has the same level cachet that he used to. And the proof is in the pudding, because as far as, like, big AAA Sony exclusives, that game didn't sell very well. Now... Rockstar, that's the other company that when they release a game, the world stops.
The Arkham people.
No, that's Rocksteady.
who could ever get them
you
right?
You just laughed like Tommy Wiseau there. Rockstar made Red Dead Redemption and Grand Theft Auto. Okay. When those games come out, like, it's a big deal. Same thing with CD Projekt Red. So anyway, CD Projekt Red is creating Cyberpunk 2077. 2020. Right, it should be 2020, right? That's going to come out in September, a couple months or a month or whatever before the new consoles.
2077.
Right. But when you buy that on your Xbox, you're going to get it. Yes, it will play on the new Xbox, but when the like the enhanced Xbox Series X version comes out, like later on, maybe a year later, you're going to get it for free.
I think still that's on cool. the it'll the be obelisk a, with the convex top that we saw.
The
right?
Xbox, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't think at this point Sony has anything quite like that in the works. They've been coy about their backwards compatibility. Do you know what that is, Paul?
Yes. Yeah. Is that a big draw though?
It is.
Being able to be like, hey, you're going to get, if you buy this now, you're still going to get this souped up version.
Yeah, it's a later. Big deal in the infancy of a console's life cycle. I think as you get toward the end of a console's life cycle, it's not nearly as big of a deal. Yeah. But like, for example, PlayStation 4 has a game coming out this week that might be the biggest and best game that has ever been released on the system.
What's it called?
The Last of Us Part 2.
It's
getting all kinds of buzz. It's getting really good reviews.
Looks like a direct sequel. Looks like a direct sequel where we're following the girl from Last of Us 1 in Part 2.
And I now love that she's, you know,
branching
about
out on her this. Own.
Right. That's yeah. That's what it looks like.
Ian, I am a font of knowledge.
So here's the thing, though.
You're a font.
You're gonna get that game,
Comic Sans.
Just a few months before the PlayStation 5, you might want to be able to play that game on your PlayStation 5. Like,
yeah,
what
no
I
fucking
used to do-
shit. If the releases are so close together, like they, you have to be able to play one on the other.
Right. Like, I mean, Ian, I don't know about you, but I was always that guy that would like right before the new machine would come out, I would sell all my current games and consoles to help pay for it.
No, because you're more of an early adopter when it comes to systems than I am. I don't think that I've ever really gotten a system so close to launch. The last one that I got was on launch was PlayStation 2. That's the last system that I got on launch.
October 26, 2000.
I stood in line at Best Buy, and you're a psychopath.
Well, my initial thought was, Matt, you're a psychopath. But then I thought, there are plenty of things that you and I know that are just as psychopathic yeah. as Matt knowing that date.
But also, like, I'm going to tell the story. Like, I stood in line to wait for it at Best Buy. I think I stood in line for an hour.
For PS4?
For PS2.
Two.
Whenever I was a young, spry 19-year-old.
You were never young and spry.
And I got it, and it was a completely valid purchase in all of my effort and money and everything. That was the system that I played the most, had the most fun with, I want to say. So, but you, Matt, you buy all these systems at launch where I can't remember the last game system that I bought outside of PlayStation 2.
I do tend to end up with all the systems at some point. I don't always buy them all at launch though.
I usually wait, like, I might wait 2 years before
yeah.
I buy a system.
I will tell you this. I have bought every PlayStation on launch day since the first one. My mm-hmm. brother and I went to Babbage's at Ross Park Mall, and we bought the PlayStation 1 the day that it came out, and we bought a game called Battle Arena Toshinden. That was the game that we bought with it. It was a fighting game. And at the time, 3D style fighting games were not very common, so it was a awesome big deal. But trust me, I've played it recently; it is dog shit. Hmm. But we did it did come with like a demo disc. Actually, it came with a couple different demo discs, and it sort of like revealed what the promise of the PlayStation was going to be by showing videos of games like Twisted Metal and Warhawk and Tekken. And it was like, okay, I can't wait for this stuff. And those games weren't very far behind. So very quickly, the PlayStation became an amazing system. And then toward the latter part of the life of that machine, you had things like Metal Gear Solid. I guess that was more probably in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
But like Resident Evil, Metal Gear, some great, great stuff on there.
So what are we looking at for the... They did announce a whole host of games for PlayStation.
Yeah, they
5.
Did.
Are there any particular ones that you're waiting on?
This sounds like a good interjection for my question. This may sound dumb, but I'm not the video game guy, so it should be par for the course. Do systems still come with a built-in game?
Not usually, unless you get a special edition. The PlayStation 4 that I have is a Star Wars Battlefield edition. So
Battlefront.
Battlefront. See, I played it once. So Battlefront. So it has Star Wars logos and insignias on the
hardware.
On the hardware, and it came with that game. But you have to buy a special pack to get that. It's not Super Mario Brothers doesn't come with the game.
Gotcha.
Or the console.
Right. Whenever the machines launch, they like never come with a game. I think the last
because
major system
the 80s were more honest and they gave you something to play when you got the system.
Yeah, well,
like now where you just buy a system and you just watch Sauron watch you and you don't get to play anything.
Well,
or you're like, I can't get my internet to work on this Xbox.
The last system that came with a game, I think, like at launch, was the Wii. Wii Sports, yeah. And then, like, even Nintendo went, like, was the Wii the next system after the N64?
No,
it
was the GameCube.
The GameCube
didn't come with a game.
The N64 didn't come with a game. So it wasn't in like since the Super Nintendo where you got Super Mario World. And back then you had the Sega Genesis. What game came with that, Ian?
Well, for me it was Sonic the Hedgehog.
Before Sonic was created.
Altered Beast,
that's
really?
Right.
Really? That was their free offering, Altered
Beast?
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Which is why Sega was off to a little bit of a rocky start there. Until Kolinsky
took over.
Because
that was not very family friendly.
Right. Cool
like,
logo,
hey,
though,
kids,
right, Ian?
Do you want to... Yeah, very cool. Matt was just talking before... yesterday, when we had a conversation, we were trying to set up having this podcast, and we had to not do it because we both had to update our computers at the same time.
Yeah, just it wasn't meant to be. But
Matt and I were talking about
Altered Beast
in the type font.
What I'll tell you,
Matthew Sweet released an album called Altered Beast. I think it's collectively one of his best works.
Is it about ancient muscle beasts?
It's about everything and more. It's a very good album.
If it uses music from that game, I might be into it.
I don't think it does.
Well, then fuck it.
How can he use that name? How dare he?
Right?
Brazenly.
Does it start
like,
rise
do?
From your grave?
What are you going to do, Sega? No.
They're not going to do shit.
They're in their grave.
Right.
Is that the last podcast, Rise From Your Grave?
That's where that comes
so
from.
So here, real quick, mm-hmm. going back to that bizarre Sega rumor about them branding the Xbox, what the announcement ended up being, which wasn't that, it ended up being that they're doing this, they're calling it a fog gaming service. Instead of cloud gaming, they're calling it fog gaming.
I hate this.
It's and people were like, really? This is the big announcement? So Sega just sucked. Like, who even recognizes them anymore? But anyway, Paul, you had asked, like, what games did they announce that look pretty good?
Well, Ian asked that. I asked if...
Oh, sorry.
You got a free game when you bought the $500 system. You fucking
we're
better
guessing.
Get
we're
one
guessing
free
it's
game.
I mean,
yeah.
Hey, fuck that. Even if you're paying $300 for a system, you better get a fucking goddamn game with it.
And one controller. Remember when you used to get two controllers?
Now they're like, go fuck yourself. You have no friends.
I
Sauron is your friend.
They quit that shit so long ago, I'm used to getting something with one controller.
So yeah, what Matt, let's run through some games that they announced.
The first one that they showed was Spider-Man Miles Morales, which appears like it's going to be probably the big launch title for PlayStation 5, and they need something big. Personally, I feel like it's not big enough because I don't think it's a true sequel to the Spider-Man game that they came out with a couple years ago. It looks like it's more of an expansion.
Yeah, it looks like, kind of like a reskin.
Yeah, which kind of sucks. Like, before we even go too far, I'll tell you, I am nervous about what the system is going to actually have at launch. I think if there was going to be that big, awesome game, we would have seen it at this event on Thursday.
Do you need a billion great things at launch?
You need one, and I'll tell you why.
So, well, right, but like, you need one, but do you need a bunch of different things? Because I would expect you need one cool thing that you want to check out, and then like you get time to play that game, and then they start rolling shit out, and then you get to roll into all these other games.
No, you're right. But the day that the machine launches, I think it's very important for them to have something that appeals to everybody or most people, because their competition is going to have a new Halo game at launch, and that's a really big deal. Halo, I don't think, is as big as it was like
20 years ago.
Well, yeah, actually, it is like 20 years ago now.
I know video games but, and shit.
But I don't think Halo came down from its like elite status until probably around like Halo 4, which is a little under 10 years ago now. So, but this new one seems like it's a sort of a kind of a soft reboot of Halo. And from everything that people are seeing and hearing about, it seems like this is going to be a very...
recast MasterChef?
Are they going to what?
Recast MasterChef?
No, Steve.
Is it not going to be Gordon Ramsay anymore?
Yes, it's Gordon Ramsay. He's like, damn.
Damn you aliens. I will tell you this, man. The guy that does the voice of the Master Chief, his name's Steve Downes, is like...
Sounds just like Gordon Ramsay.
He sounds exactly like him. No, he's one of like the best video game voices. For me, it's him and Solid Snake from the Metal Gear games. Those guys just have like the two best video game voices.
What's really funny to me is that so Nolan North is a big video game voice actor, huge in the community. I know Nolan North because he played one of the dads in Pretty Little Liars.
Oh. Ouch.
And like I would keep seeing him pop up in my Twitter feed and all these like different like nerdy ass places. I'm like, why am I keep seeing Nolan North? And then I realized, oh, he's this fucking huge video game guy. But no, he was Troy and Belisario's dad to me.
So Matt, I don't think that a lot of people are going to mind, despite the fact that we just were like, oh, it's kind of reskinned version of Spider-Man.
People seem to be really amped about it.
They're hyped for it. And it does look cool. So maybe if you haven't, maybe if you just liked the original Spider-Man or you haven't really dove into it too deep, maybe this is something for you. It seems like it's going to be the big thing as well.
Yeah, it does.
I think they're coming with a couple of pronged approach because the Gran Turismo series,
yeah,
they're relaunching that. And also Ratchet and Clank is also
another one
that I think could appeal to a wide variety of people.
Yeah, I agree. I just don't think that the Ratchet and Clank or Gran Turismo are going to be available this year. I don't think those are coming until next year. But I'm just talking about when the machine actually releases. Who knows what they're going to have. But the big one that they're going to push is the Spider-Man game, which I'm not really surprised that it's kind of just a reskin of the existing Spider-Man game, because A, people love that game, and B...
Was that called The Amazing Spider-Man?
It was called Marvel's Spider-Man. And they, I think that, what was my point? I can't remember what I was going to say, but I think people are going to be like, I just spent $500. This game, while it is like, it's a new story and everything, it looks exactly like what I was playing on my PS4. Like, why did I spend $500 on this?
Well, from what I've heard today, it sounds like that Marvel Spider-Man game got the swinging through New York engine down. Like, that
it's awesome.
So fucking good. So what, like, they're going to use that. What more do you want from another one? Like, that game seemed to do gangbusters. Like, that game seemed so fucking awesome. Everyone seemed to have a great review of it. So now if you get, like, a different... So long as all of the mechanics work the same, but you're getting a different story with Miles Morales,
right,
like, that should be a completely different experience.
Yeah, I
even
think that's going to be enough for a lot of people.
Even if you're still swinging the same and the controllers work, I would think, for me anyway, that would make me like it more, because I don't need to learn a whole new game while I'm doing this.
Yeah.
I can kind of just jump in and enjoy it without having to go through the trials and travails of having to learn how to work this character.
I think that would make sense if it was a sequel and it was on PlayStation 4. But when you are selling brand new hardware that, you know, even during the video, the CEO of PlayStation said, this is going to be the biggest leap, the biggest generational leap ever in video game history, like from one generation to the next, which is a total fucking farce.
Part of me is like, go big or go home. You have to say that. Another part of me is like, ooh, that's too much boasting.
Right,
you,
like,
can't go that far.
Like, think about how big it was going from like the Genesis to the PlayStation era. Like, the 2D shit to 3D all of a sudden. Or even the Nintendo to the Super Nintendo. Like, those were instantaneous, like, holy shit, look at how far this is advanced.
I think the jump for me, the jump was PlayStation to PlayStation 2. PlayStation 2 just blew my mind with what it looked like.
Yeah.
So it'll be, and the technology is so crazy and advanced now that it's going to be hard unless gameplay looks like these trailers that they're putting out. There's a trailer for NBA 2K with Zion Williams and like, or Williamson. It looks insane. It looks like a real person playing basketball and sweating and dunking and all this. Like, but I don't know if that's gameplay. I don't think it is. It's just a trailer. So until gameplay looks like that, then we're not the leap ahead that everybody's kind of saying that we're going
to. The big technological thing that people are talking about is the new machines, both PlayStation and Xbox, have a solid state hard drive in it, and they're saying that's going to make a huge difference. And the one that they really illustrated that with was that Ratchet and Clank game.
The different, where they teleport through the different worlds, and it's a completely new world that doesn't have any loading time. It's smooth transition.
Right, you're just there all of a sudden, and it's like, and it, on another system, it maybe would have taken like 2 minutes to load that world.
Isn't that kind of the thing that that open universe game does, where you like find your own planets and everything?
Yeah, but this was different. This was like a much more detailed, populated environment that was just there, and you were in the middle of it.
What game was I talking about?
No Man's Sky.
Yes, that's right.
So I think that
was that a Xbox game?
It was originally
dual
PlayStation,
console?
But now it's they call it multi-platform.
Mm.
But the it was originally on PlayStation, now it's on everything, I guess. But I think with the Spider-Man game, if they were going to do like things only PlayStation 5 could do that the PS4 couldn't, maybe like I want to be able to go in all the buildings. Like, right now, they're just like hollow boxes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, make it even more detailed and crazy. But as it is, here's why I think it's just basically an expansion of the existing Spider-Man game, is because I feel like Sony did a really bad job of planning out the latter exclusives that it had. Like, The Last of Us 2 should have been on the PlayStation 5. Like, why would you release one of your biggest games like just 5 months before your new system, when it could be a launch title for your new system?
Do you think any of these release issues had something to do with Corona?
Not that one.
The shutdown of
the country? No, I don't think so.
Because the planning had to be so far in advance that it wouldn't have been an impact. Like, developing a game takes years and years and years.
And they've been
saying, you have to be like, all right, we're going to do it for this platform.
Yeah, but I think it would make... They would benefit financially getting 4 more months, for like 4 extra months out of Last of Us 2, especially when they start promoting Last of Us 2 and we're still in, we don't really know what's happening with quarantine. People may still be in lockdown for months later. Maybe they're rolling it out on the expectation of everyone's still in quarantine for extra months. Everyone's going to be at home. They're going to play this game. And then all of a sudden, everything starts, you know, we're different stages, and now bars are open, now restaurants are open. And now maybe the guys at PlayStation are like, ah, fuck, we could have just rolled this out.
Nah, I think the planning is way too in it, like, too far off to ever be impacted by something like what we experienced this year.
But this is unprecedented shit this year.
They didn't start making this game in January, though, dude.
Right, but the releases and everything.
But you have to program it for a certain.
They actually pushed it back a couple times, and then I think they bumped it forward like a month or something. But originally, it was supposed to come out, I think, for this past holiday, and then it missed that, and it got pushed to the spring, and then I think it got pushed to summer, and now it got bumped up to like early summer. And then they have another game coming out in like a month called Ghost of Tsushima or something like that. That looks really cool.
Coach Ghost.
Right. But like, this is the kind of stuff.
It's about this ghost that coaches this ex-football player who's now a superhero.
Yeah. It's going to completely make people say Halo. What?
Denny O'Neil. Who?
It looks good, but again, I don't know why it's not going to be on PlayStation 5. And here's the thing that's kind of annoying me about PlayStation, is they're not being clear. Like, yeah, guys, this stuff is coming out on PlayStation 4. Don't worry. You can play that game on your new PS5. No problem. Like, that messaging just has not been clear at all. And it's like, why are you not fucking being clear about this kind of shit? Especially when your competitor is being incredibly clear on how it's going to work and incredibly, like, consumer friendly. You know, you buy that, you can play it on this, and then there's going to be a souped up version. You're going to get it for free. Like, where is that messaging from Sony?
Are they relying on consumers to buy it twice?
I think so, because that's what people have done in the past. Like, for example, on PlayStation 3, Grand Theft Auto 5 came out at the very end of that life cycle. It came out in like September. Then in November, PlayStation 4 comes out. And then within a few months, Grand Theft Auto 5 is available on the PS4. And it was a much more enhanced version of the game, and like kind of makes you be like, oh, I can't even play it on the PS3. But you had to rebuy it. Whereas with what Xbox is saying, it's like, you do not need to rebuy the same game twice. Now, I don't think they're doing it out of the kindness of their heart. I think they're doing it because it's shrewd and aggressive, and they have a lot of ground to make up. So I think that's what...
Xbox?
Yes. Yeah, I think they got outsold this generation like 4-1 in America. Worse overall in the world. But I'm just talking about U.S. sales, because that is kind of like the number one market in the world. Ian, a couple of the other standouts, what did you see that looked good to you that might make you buy a PlayStation 5?
I don't know about if they are specifically at launch, but they did release a new Resident Evil video game, Village.
Looks cool.
Looks really cool, although
Is it called Resident Evil Village?
Yeah, and in fact, the way that the trailer plays is it plays out all the footage and you get to see, and it has a more supernatural bend to it, so you wouldn't necessarily initially think it was a Resident Evil game. And once the title treatment comes up, it says Village, and then the V-I-L-L turns into the... It gets highlighted because that is how in the Roman numerals of Resident Evil. And then at the bottom it says Resident Evil, so it kind of tricks you a little bit. That looks cool.
That was a cool reveal.
I've been super scarred. I don't know if after playing the Resident Evil virtual game at the 3D game at your house, I don't know that.
I
don't think I can ever play
it. I can't believe I don't have that video anymore. It was the funniest thing in the world when we had Ian strap on the VR helmet and play the demo for
Kitchen.
It was outstanding.
Which was the Resident Evil kind of like a VR sort of like tech demo kind of thing.
I don't think I can play Resident Evil anymore because of that. And I'm a big fan, but I've been damaged.
We are already very long in the tooth, and I don't necessarily want to propose more questions, but isn't Resident Evil already supernatural? Like, there are monsters.
It's more science-based because it is...
It's more like biological.
Yeah,
this new one is like, ooh, ghosts.
You know what? There's a guy that...
one of them may be...
He comes back from the dead and he does draw up plays.
He's like, Mila Jovovich, I'm going to need you to run run right and then cut left.
It came up, it said Village, and then there were like, there were football post routes going and little diagrams of X and O's. And yeah, and then they evaporated into apparitions. So yeah, I'll be real quick. The Resident Evil game looks really cool. Ratchet and Clank looks really cool. And there was another game that caught my attention. It was called Returnal. It looks like some kind of Groundhog Day space adventure kind of thing.
Kind of like Alien to me.
Looked really cool to me. Matt, what were the games that stood out to you?
Quickly.
Miles Morales. Ratchet and Clank looked cool. I just don't know if like I'd be into that. That company made... it's called Insomniac, and Insomniac also makes a Spider-Man game.
It's a very underrated Stephen King book.
I thought so.
Oh, hey, called Insomnia. Oops.
I got to tell you something. I read recently that Stephen King said that he would have loved to have written a story about Jason Voorhees recently.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he tweeted that about from the perspective of Jason Voorhees constantly being reborn and killed year after year at Camp Crystal Lake.
Yeah. I want to read that.
Yeah.
That needs to happen.
I'd check it out.
Yeah, I would too.
We could write it, you know.
Yeah, right.
In our spare time when we're done writing Super Pro.
Once we're
from the creators of Super Pro Reborn. Come
Super
I,
Super
Jason.
Pro Super Pro second down.
Should it be fourth down to represent like
that's
last
the end of the
chance.
Line? Yeah, that's
that's our like that's old super, man super pro
super pro overtime
super pro onside kick.
That's the Elseworlds one onside kick.
Super pro first point wins. You've got to tell us. Are you done talking about your favorite games? Because we had a billion opportunities to wrap up on a high note.
No, I'm not. I think that those two Insomniac games look cool. I was hoping that Insomniac would resurrect a shooter, Ian, that they... did on PlayStation 3 called Resistance. Did you ever play the Resistance games?
No, I'm not a big shooter guy, so I don't remember
they
that.
Were really good. They were very like Halo-esque, much better than the Killzone games, which I'm sure you've heard of before.
I've heard of them.
Those are like Sony's other like exclusive shooter. I was surprised. They don't have a shooter. They don't have a direct like response to Halo, which that was my big prediction that they would pull something out, like some kind of new sci-fi futuristic type thing. Didn't happen. And I thought Insomniac would do it. They didn't do it. The fuck was that?
Even though it's just randomly the middle of June, there are a lot of fireworks going on nightly.
Oh, okay.
Nightly.
Apparently
that's
next
that's
door.
Pretty tame. That's pretty tame right now.
So the one that stood out to me, Ian, I don't think it's a launch game, but I thought it looked really cool, was Stray. The one where you play as a cat inside a like cyberpunk type post-apocalyptic world. There's no humans. It's all like robots doing stuff. I just thought the aesthetic was so cool. It was absolutely like a world that I want to explore, and it like gets me excited for the Cyberpunk 2077,
mm-hmm.
which is coming out. But I will tell you this, man. Now, price and release date is going to be a major factor on like which system are you going to get? Because like I don't know, man. Like, I was an Xbox guy, and then I went to PlayStation on the PlayStation 4. I'm leaning toward PlayStation, mostly because they have the VR, but they haven't said, A, does the VR work with the PS5? I have to think it will.
I would imagine so.
And I also think in the future you're going to see the PSVR 2, which will be like a wireless version with like clearer graphics and everything. But that thing is just too cool to like abandon. So like I'm definitely leaning more toward PlayStation, but man, it's probably going to be $500, and if Xbox comes in and undercuts them by like $100, that's going to be tough to that's exactly what happened at the beginning of this generation. PlayStation undercut Xbox by $100, and you saw what happened after that. But yeah, overall I thought the event was cool, but like I think it was missing some really important details, like how much does it cost and when does it come out? And what can I play when it launches?
Yeah,
I feel like it lacked in the two most important things, how much and when.
Yeah.
But maybe they're waiting to see what Xbox does in July, and then they're going to be like, haha, we can knock this down by a couple
they're
more dollars.
They're definitely waiting. They're definitely waiting.
It's a virtual game of chicken.
It's exactly what it is.
Motherfucker.
So in July, I'm excited to see what they have to reveal in July, because Xbox, I know, is coming in very aggressively to this generation. Last year, they bought like four or five different studios to bolster their games. They have this, they're called Xbox Game Studios, and I think they have like 15 developers under it now, so they're gonna have a shitload of original content, just like PlayStation currently has a shitload of original content. So it's gonna be a much more even battle. So
in about a month we will cover all of that Xbox goodness, but for tonight
maybe on a Patreon,
maybe even in one of the Prime episodes, because I feel like I was way more invested than I normally am during video game talk. But that will do it for us tonight. My name is Paul McGinty.
Ian Sharpley.
Matt Casale.
We'll see you next time.